Rolling.
I came here on a golden rocket.
You never listen to me.
Leaving on a magic carpet and now.
Divorce sucks.
It's what you do this time.
We don't like each other.
He doesn't like me. I like him.
I'm Serge.
I'm Monica.
We were married for almost 9 years. We're divorced now.
We live four doors down from each other.
We have three kids.
You're not being very nice to me.
This is our story of divorce and life after divorce. Our ex-life.
Our ex-life.
You want a drink? I want a drink, too.
Okay, so we're back with episode two. And the reality of the situation is, this is no lie, that we literally just had a really big argument. It doesn't matter what it's about. It's just about something personal. But we had a really big argument. We stopped recording. I went outside to smoke a cigarette. I come back in and Monica's hunched over in the chair. And I don't even know if this will work or not, because we're trying to have this podcast episode about coexisting, co-parenting. We even have this title for it called Tricky Orbits, which is exactly what's going down literally at this moment. It almost feels too close for comfort, too real.
I honestly don't know if I can do this episode. I just feel very upset. Very meta.
But if we push ourselves through this microphone, we might be able to come up with something cool, because in some ways, there's never a better time in the world for us to discuss what we wanted to set out to discuss today anyway, you know?
I suppose it's an example of how you have to suck it up even when you're angry and hurt. You just have to keep going because you have children. And so you have to push the relationship forward, even though you want to move to another country.
Which country would you move to?
Spain, Mexico, maybe.
Mm. Really?
Yeah.
Those are two interesting choices.
Mexico is cheap. I want a beach. Anyway, it's been a shitty week. And I just don't even feel very articulate. We were going to talk about co-parenting and the difficulties. We sound very down. Start it over.
We don't have to start it over. It's okay if we're down. It's okay. You know, this isn't some sort of fake news. You know, this is not the fake news of our life. This is the real deal. And I guess, you know, my primary concern would be that people think that this is bullshit, but it's not. You know, this is very, very real. And at the same time, when you were just talking, you said something that caught my ear, and it was that in these situations, you feel like you have to keep going. You know, you have to keep making this effort to co-parent with me, and that we have to keep trying. And I would submit to you right now, like, is it just a question of we have to do it? Or is there not a part of us that even wants to do it, no matter how messed up and strange and sometimes sad or difficult it gets?
Well, it's both, because there's no alternative. I don't want to not I don't want my kids to be far away from you if I moved far away. And I don't want to be far away from my kids if they're with you. The only option to me is living near you. So it's this fluid exchange. And I kind of, I guess I view like the first 3-4 years after divorce. I mean, I know some people get married within a year or whatever, and that's just not how I work. So I've kind of said to myself, okay, maybe the first 3-4 years, 3 to 5 years after divorce, it's going to be hard and awful, especially living a couple doors down. But if we can make it through that and get to this other side where everything's cool and we've made it, then it will be good. But I still feel like I'm in the trenches, like the divorce trenches. So there is no option. I need to be near my kids. So I'm trying to power through these difficult years. And then the other answer to your question is, we're horribly enmeshed in each other's lives in ways beyond our kids. And so I want
like
to
how?
Be. I don't know. You're my family here. I don't have any family here. It's you and your brother and your mom and stepdad. That's my family. So there's this whole angle for me that I want to stay involved, because otherwise, who do I have here?
Right. And that's, it's true. And it's something that I think until, like really, really recently, I haven't even been able to begin to wrap my head around that, you know, about what that's like for you, you know? Like, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm a guy that has really heard you when you talk about that, how you often feel alone, and you get along well with my family and stuff, but it's not the same thing, and I get that. And I'm not someone, I feel like, that has been able to recognize that.
Well,
mostly because it's not like that for me, but also because I probably at times have just tried to push it away. The recognition
we
of it.
We should tell people that you sued me to live in Pennsylvania. Like, the year we got a divorce, you went to an attorney and filed a lawsuit for custody so I could either fight you for custody and move back home to Utah, or I could stay in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And so I stayed in Pennsylvania where you wanted to live.
Right.
So we are now in your town, surrounded by your family, who I love, but it's still a weird situation to find myself in.
Do you feel like it would have been better if we did go to Utah?
No. It was an instinctive reaction. Utah was my home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't...
And it still is, right?
Not really. I think you just have when something bad happens to you, you have this instinct to return to what you know, where your family is. I'd had jobs at news stations in Utah my whole life, and it was kind of this safety net.
Right.
So it was like, okay, that's where I'm going to go. It's going to be fine. And it didn't end up that way. And I'm glad I don't live in Utah. Good Lord, I'm glad I don't live in Utah. I don't want to raise my kids in Utah. So, but it doesn't, just because I'm glad I didn't end up there doesn't negate that it's a weird existence for me here. Especially as more time goes by and.
No, I get that. It really resonates with me. Although I have, admittedly, extreme difficulty trying to put myself in that position, in that mindset, in even coming close to being able to feel what you feel a lot of the times in regards to that, and everything that goes along with it, which I think there's a lot that goes along with that, when you feel as if, in a sense, you're operating in my universe.
Right.
Right.
And right. Yet, so all of our holidays are spent together with your family, like right. They always have been. So what happens to me when you get a girlfriend or remarry or what happens to me then? I guess that's stupid because, of course, I should expect to not be a part of your family because we divorced. But it hasn't been that way. Mm-hmm. I'm very much a part of your family still. And your mom is one of my best friends. And your brother is one of my best friends. And so it's just I feel like a tourist in my own life sometimes.
I wonder if it's a fairly common thing. Like, it doesn't even seem that common, right? Like, I don't know anyone who's able to describe their divorce existence like you are, but just because I don't know anyone doesn't mean that there's not people out there that are in that situation. Ours was a marriage that involved two people from two distant places, you know? Usually the only things that you hear about in the news or anything like that are people that from different countries or whatever, right? And one of them flees back.
No, I don't know. There's a lot of people I know that the ex-spouses live in different states and the kids go back and forth, or they spend 6 weeks with dad in the summer. And that is an unfathomable existence for me.
Right.
And so it makes what I'm doing imperative here, living four doors down with you. It's the only option for me. And so I guess that brings it full circle in that even when stuff gets really hard or I feel hurt or upset, I still need to be here. There's no choice for me. So in some ways I feel like a hostage, but it's a hostage to being with my kids who I love. And that's the only reason I exist right now is because I'm a mom and these three beautiful kids are the best thing I have going. But it can be difficult. I've done a really good job, I think, of making a life for myself here. You know, but it's still, it's still a weird feeling.
What about, like, if I just ask you, what if it was possible, like, you could live some other place, wherever it would be, and we still had this, like, just saying it was technologically possible to, you have the kids half the week, I have them half the week, and you're in Spain or Mexico, and I'm here.
Would I want to live apart from you?
I guess I'm asking,
no,
like, would you want that?
No, because when the kids are with you here, they're only four doors down from me. That's key. It's just all the time they feel like they're right near me.
Right.
When they're with you, they're four doors down, and I can text you and say, can I pop over and say hello? It's the only way I can see being divorced. I don't understand how anybody else does it. I honestly don't. And I'm not demeaning anybody else's choices. Everyone, you know, things happen and people's divorce scenarios end up what they are.
Right.
And a lot of people are unhappy in their divorce scenarios. But this scenario, living in the same town where the kids have the same friends, is the only one I can imagine. So part of me, when I'm going through these difficult moments, I know I have to suck it up because it's the only option. And
would
I have to make
it a sacrifice that you've made, like this ultimate sacrifice?
No, because that's putting a martyr twist on it. I'm just doing the best thing for my kids as a mother. But
so it's more a hostage situation.
Sometimes I get pissed at you, I think.
Right.
I think my brain energy gets mad at you that we live in your town surrounded by your family and everything kind of felt like it worked out for you. And I'm just sort of like, okay, well, you live in central Pennsylvania now and you got to make it work. And so I get mad sometimes, but it doesn't matter. That's just one little thing to overcome.
I guess in so many ways, in standing here today in the heat of a moment in time, and it is a heated moment because, again, we just had this, you know, kind of epic argument.
It wasn't epic. That's not an epic argument.
All right. Well, it felt a little epic, a mini epic. But, like, here we are, and the topic that we had chosen is just coming to life in front of us. It's literally like, you know, art imitates life, life imitates art. Here we are. And I wonder, for people that are listening to us talk about this stuff, I wonder if they can relate to both sides of us, or if they're going to relate to maybe more your side?
No, it's just a perfect example of when you have to be together with your spouse for the children, you have to put your game face on and get through it. And so I guess we're putting our game face on and getting through a podcast, which must be incredibly uncomfortable to listen to. I don't know. It is what it is. Oh, I hate that. That's the worst platitude of all time.
It is what it is?
Did I tell you I came up with a name? I thought I came up with a name. I know a lot of guys that just say those bullshit platitudes.
I think I'm one of them.
It is what it is. At the end of the day, I call them platitudes.
Right.
He's like bro that's like, but I thought, I'm so genius. Platitude. I want to trademark that.
I'm definitely a platitude.
It's in the Urban Dictionary, so I didn't come up with it. Platitude. It is what it is.
So, do you feel like we're doing a good job at
this podcast or co-parenting?
No.
This podcast, no.
The podcast is amazing. What are you talking about? Come on. Like, this is a great podcast. You couldn't fake this funk, man. Like, this is a really good podcast.
You can't fake the funk.
No.
I'm in a bad, bad funk.
You are. But you're admitting it. You're talking about it. People that might listen to this, you know, sure, some are going to be just like, oh, this is awkward and weird and it's like reality. But that's not what we're trying to do here, you know? That's not who you and I are. This is our life. And we end up having a fair amount, if not a lot, of conversations about just what we're talking about here now. You know, who are we? How the hell did we get here? What's going on? What's going to happen? Why is this happening?
Yeah.
All those questions. And the fallout from a divorce that occurred 3 years ago is the whole point of this podcast.
But that's the fucking bummer that I'm just tired of, is the fallout never stops. I don't know where other people are in their years of divorce, but I would think 3 years out of a divorce, the fallout is winding down. Like I said, other people are remarried and shit. And I don't know if this continued fallout is because we've remained close or because we're trying to co-parent and be friends, but it's just really hard, and I'm just tired.
Do you know that, like, I don't have a word for it, but I wish there was a word for it, like that feeling of, like, you're in a month, right? Say it's October that just ended a couple days ago, and toward the end of the month, like the 30th, you pay the last bill for the month. Like, they're kind of spread out, or maybe you had this one lingering one, and you finally throw the money at it. And you feel good. You're like, damn, October's done. Like, and then
2 days
later,
beat your ass.
Well, 2 days later, it shows up like in your inbox or whatever. This is the new bill. Like,
right.
The cycle starts all over again.
Yep.
And you were feeling so good for a day or two. You're like, damn, I am so on top of everything.
That's divorce.
And boom. It's life, though, isn't it? It's like, it is divorce, but it's also in a larger scheme. It's everything. It's like, the hits just keep coming. You know, they just keep coming. And I suppose if you're one of the trillions of survivors, for lack of a better term,
survivor,
you know, that's a stupid term, whatever. But if you're one of the people that continues to wake up in the morning and put your stuff on and go downstairs and make a freaking pot of coffee that tastes like ass because your coffee maker sucks and it's dirty and you're too lazy or tired to clean it. Like, if you're one of those people, which is basically everyone.
Is it?
I think so.
It's half of everyone. I mean, divorce survivors are half of everyone.
But when I feel like I look at it like that, and I can see not only our specific divorce and our attempts pushing onward, you know, and making it okay for our kids and for ourselves and trying to have a life for ourselves. When I look at all that and I figure that we're probably not alone, even though it feels like we are, you know, we're probably one of many. And that's why I think doing this, even right now, when you probably don't feel at all like doing it, this podcast makes sense, you know? The best writing, the best films, all of it, it's usually the painful stuff that people connect with the most. And There's a lot of that, you know. There's a lot of that with you and I. There's a lot of pain.
What, a lot of pain?
Yeah, there
there's
is.
There's a lot of pain,
you know,
with you and I.
But it's not as bad as it could be. You know, is that a platitude?
It's not as bad as it could be.
Or it's...
It could be worse.
Maybe we have to retitle this thing.
It could be worse.
It could be worse. But, you know, all those cliches or whatever you call them, they exist because they've been said so many times that they're just kind of tattooed into the ether, aren't they? And yet there's a lot of truth to them, you know, or at least most of the time. And that's one that seems to have a real truth to it, that it could be. My mom says that all the time, and I've come to accept it that she's usually right. You know, she's usually right. But it's like, yeah, it could be worse. And maybe that, you know, that's an extreme stretch.
It's a shitty thing to say. Come on. When someone's going through something, it's the worst thing for them. So when someone, you know, delegitimizes it, is that a word? If they delegitimize your feelings with it could be worse, you want to beat their ass. Don't say it could be worse to someone.
What's better to say?
Sorry you're feeling that way.
Just that and leave it go?
I mean, you know, you can listen. Listening is the best thing.
But when you're trying like hell to qualify your own life, you know, to look at your own life, your own bullshit, your own pain, suffering, blues,
you
whatever.
You can think it could be worse to yourself, but don't say it to other people. It's shitty.
Right. Do you ever think it to yourself? Like
all the time. I told you, I often think, you know, when I get mad at little things or big things or whatever it is, a lot of the time I try to, you know, this is so silly. I'm wasting time getting upset about this. Somebody could get hit by a bus. There's another platitude, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could get hit by a bus tomorrow. So I try not to waste
time. That's better, though, than you will get hit by a bus tomorrow.
You could?
Yeah. If somebody tells you will get hit by a bus tomorrow, that's harrowing.
What? I don't even know where you're going with that. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, don't tell people it could be worse. People that tell people it could be worse are assholes. Oh, did I just call your mom an asshole? You said your mom says that all the time.
No, I think you reach a certain age where you can say where you want.
I love you, Marion. Out of school, I took a J.O.B. Making buttons in a factory. My point is that I feel like if I felt respected by you, like you considered me to be this person who you valued, or if I came to you and said, hey, Serge, this thing hurt my feelings, that you received it and validated it, instead of like, you sort of sometimes pretend to validate something, and then a month later you're like, what the fuck? I don't even understand why. And then you take away the validation. You never, like, it's just always a constant, like, I tell you a feeling, and I feel like maybe sometimes that we come to terms with something, and then later you take it away. I don't feel respected. I don't feel like I would have to fight so hard or claw at you or be weird if I felt like you were this person who gave a shit about my feelings, when the few times I do come to you and say, hey, Serge, I have this issue. Instead of you, you're just like, no, I don't buy it. No, fuck that. But yet when you talk about other women, you're filled with respect for them.
Right.
Or you're like, oh, well, this is why she's great. I get none of that from you. And I'm someone who, I do a podcast with you. I co-parent with you. Basically, we run a business. Like, co-parenting is a big fucking deal. And so you can't say to me, oh, it doesn't matter because we're divorced now. No, it's even more important that you give a shit in certain ways. That when I say to you, hey, I don't like my son wearing a diaper, you say, I hear what you're saying.
It's a bright October afternoon, and I'm having a smoke on the front porch. I look at my phone, 2:48. I yawn, and a crow flies up toward the post office, like it just flew out of my mouth. atmosphere gets all gauzier this time in the afternoon. Putting Violet and Henry on the bus in the morning is sharper, cleaner. Why? I have no idea. The mornings are cooler than the afternoons, but so what? The possibilities for the day ahead feel more possible for all of us when I'm still buzzed on oatmeal and the first coffees of the day. By 2:30, heading into 3, though, I'm all heavy drag. I notice the faded black Sharpie writing on the edge of the porch. It's pale letters now. Henry scrawled it like a year ago when I wasn't around. Dad, it says. That's it. Dad. It seems a reminder from some other side of all this, as if a ghost came here once and scrawled it out for me to see. You can laugh, but what do you know? There could be a ghost of a guy running around my block day and night, anchored to this land where he wasted so much time back when he lived, back when he tilled some cornfields not far from here in the bashing sun. Maybe he missed things, good things. Love, tenderness, tears. Dad. Dad. Henry wrote it. I know he did. I know his little letters anywhere, but I never did ask him. Today I wonder about it all for a sec. I'm smoking and checking email on my phone when Monica cruises by in her Odyssey. I know she sees me, but she doesn't look or wave. She's mad at me. Sometimes she waves or honks, or even waves and honks, if we're both living in the middle of one of those short windows of peace we seem hell-bent on denying ourselves. I can't even remember what she's mad at half the time anymore. Me and her blur up for me these days. And look, I don't worry about it as much as I used to because, hey, we're divorced. We're two people living on the same block but across the universe at the same time. She's got her place, I've got mine. Mine says Dad on it and Sharpie on the porch. When it disappears eventually, then it won't anymore. I watch her crank the Odyssey hard into her driveway, and I know it's a fuck you crank. I still know her turns, even if I know less and less about her with each passing hour. Certain things become things carved into your bones after a while. The way Monica pulls a harder-than-usual left turn at 2:53 p.m. on a slow blue October day when nothing is happening except she's mad at me because I don't always understand or think of her anymore, maybe even when I still should. That's a thing I have scraped into one of my ribs. Or two names slashed into the bark of a tired old tree. I feel the raised welts of my ex-wife's tears or dragon breath slapping against my thumping heart sometimes even when I don't probably need to anymore. I could ignore it, but it's tough with Monica.
It's just always a constant, like...
She lets me know. She flings her minivan around like a plastic sword, and I can feel it. She doesn't wave? Well, I can feel that too. Caught up in these various worlds we live in, the one where I live by myself or with the kids, the one where she lives on and on right down the street with the kids and then without them, we're both letting go of so much all the time. Still, we go around trying not to release all of it at once. That's the trick of divorce, I guess. That's probably the trick of living another day, too, if you think about it. You can kill a person off in your head if you want to, and sometimes that's exactly what you need to do in this world. You do that, though, and before long, there's nothing left. I mean, yeah, you may free yourself from their epic bullshit and their insecurities and the 10 trillion little things that all added up to your colossal unhappiness. And with that, you may step lightly out of their crosshairs. Their shots start puffing up into some mound of dirt just off the side of your kneecaps. You can do that if you want to. But if you do, you might be losing a lot. I'm just saying. The bus is coming down our street now, and Monica is walking up towards where it'll stop outside the church. I squish a smoke down into the ashtray and set my coffee down on the table by the dying mums. It's awkward today. We do it to ourselves, I figure. I put my hands in my pockets as I hit the steps, walk towards her, towards our oldest two, towards our continuing evolution, each of us aimed at some kind of melancholy joy trip that... Come on now. No matter what the years coming down the pike might bring our separate ways, this whole story ultimately ends someday with two skeletons slipping to dust. Out in two very different graveyards, in two very different places. The kids trickle off. Re-entry. Two orbits trying to be one. Henry's first off, and right away he's trying to hide a smile. That doesn't work, though. Our boy at 6, he's weak for love. He bites his lip before he unleashes and grins so hard it slams into Mom and Dad at the exact same moment. Two skulls far away from one another, each grinning that deathy, deathy grin. Violet turns the corner up by the hot motor, dragging her backpack almost on the ground. Her soft hazel eyes are delicate and tired. She sees us waiting and she smiles as if that's the thing to do.
two rib cages falling in on themselves, dropping away from existence at precisely the same time, but without any contact at all. Monica ignores me as she loves on our kids. I don't know if they sense anything. Kids are sharp, I know that much, and this is real life. She pecks their heads and squeezes them hard, breathes them in. I wander away slow as she tells them she'll see them tomorrow. And they turn their backs on her for now, same as they'll do to me soon enough. I walk with my son and my daughter back up the block towards my place. How was your day? How was book exchange? Did you bring home your lunch bag? 3 living people, 4 living people, 5 living people, more living people straying into our paths. Then what? Christmas Eves and Christmas mornings. How many we got? Birthday parties at the bowling alley. Long summer days when nothing's doing. Humid afternoons down at the lake. The kids and me or the kids and her. Maybe the kids and me and someone else. Maybe the kids and her and someone else. Other kids, maybe kids that aren't our kids. But here we are, ice cream melting. Watch that bee, buddy. Maybe we should all go out for pizza tonight. Then what? Skeletons and skulls. Or fire and dust, or whatever. Choose your own adventure. Close your eyes and you can see us out. The late October winds will blow the same old tune out across the edges of the fields, out by where the forest hits the standing corn whistling in the wind, out over the backs of deer staring in the evening shadows, out over the bridges flowing straight out of the cities we once knew, out over the beaches and out over the wild sea and out over the most desolate excuse for an island, out over the dust of Amelia Earhart lying there under a dead crab shell in the middle of pure and fucking nowhere. The wind singing at the sky, the same old song of forever. We were here, and we wasted precious time, just like everyone else.
Surge, this is the part where I'm supposed to read a thing I wrote for this episode about how sometimes I feel like dueling Old West gunslingers when we walk from our houses to meet the kids at the bus stop. But I have other things to say, and I can do what I want because I edit this thing, so it's been a shitty week for us. Christ, it's been a shitty couple years for us, but this past week has just been really difficult for me, and I've made it tough on you. This week you told me about your girlfriend, and I don't know. I mean, of course I know you've been seeing her. You've been very respectful about letting me know who the kids are spending time with when they're with you and what they're experiencing. And I really appreciate that, because you don't have to do that. You could tell me to fuck off and mind my own business, but you always keep me informed and answer any questions I have. So thank you for that. But when you told me that you recently decided to become more serious with this person, basically telling me that you have a girlfriend for the first time since our divorce, I don't know. The depth of my negative reaction surprised even me. I mean, God, it's been 3 years. You've dated women, I've dated people. What's my deal? I've been trying to intellectualize why I'm so upset, and I guess it's because I feel like I'm losing you again. Yeah, we went through this divorce, and it was really bad, but we kind of made it through to this new place of friendship. We were dating people, but nothing super serious, so you were still kind of mine. I know that's fucked up, but aside from co-parenting issues, we talk all the time and tell each other things, and you're still very much a part of my daily life. When bad things happen to me, you're the first person I think to tell. You make things better for me. You know the ins and outs of me and all my bullshit. And you know how to make it better. So,
even though I knew you were seeing this one woman in particular, you were still available for me. Like I had the best of both worlds, you know? We've both dated people, but we're still close to each other. And my positioning in your family, who is the only family I have here, still felt solid. But now it feels scary, like I'm losing you all over again, and our dynamic is completely changing. I'm not your confidant. Someone else is. You're with someone else now. And I'm so happy for you, because I want you to be happy. I don't like when you're sad. And I want you to have fun things to do with someone who cares about you. I want someone to hold your hand and watch Netflix with you or cook you dinner. I want all of those things for you. You deserve love. But knowing those things intellectually doesn't really change my emotional response. I spend a lot of time being mad at myself for reacting to certain things in the way that I do. When I'm sad and scared, I react with anger because I'm a dysfunctional fuck who can't properly channel and express emotions. I just get mad. And I've been angry with you a lot recently, and you didn't even do anything. You've been a really good friend to me most of the time. Sometimes you're a dumbass, but you've been really good to me and patient with me, and I've just nitpicked you to death because I feel sad and hurt, and I'm scared to step into this new era of divorce where you have a girlfriend. Who I really like, by the way. If I had to pick a person who my kids spend time with, that you spend time with, I couldn't dream up a better person. She's the opposite of me. She's very kind and sweet and quiet. Everything I'm not. Anyway, I'm sorry for who I am. But you're the love of my life. You're Serge, and there's never going to be another you. You loom so large in my world. You're such an asshole sometimes, but you're an innocent asshole. You try harder to be a better person than anyone I've ever known. Which, thanks for waiting until after we divorced to do that, by the way. But I have such mad respect for you and your life struggle, and I just really want to thank you for being my soulmate in parenting and in life, really. We come from the same stuff, you and I. We feel things hard and deep, and we get angry, and we're intense, and that's a lot of why we don't work so well together. But just because we don't work so well in a marriage environment doesn't mean I ever stop loving you. You're stitched into my mind and heart and soul, and it's always going to be that way. And I'm trying to be a better person. I am, because I know that if I can't do this, where does that leave me? Angry and miserable and distancing myself from my kid's dad? I don't want to put them through weird shit or any kind of divorce horror that we grew up with. Anyway. Please accept my apology for nitpicking you to death and acting a fool. I'm weak and tired and scared and sad and mad and confused. But it's the way it is, and it's the way it has to be right now, I guess. I just have to go through it and climb out the other side. But a lot of the time I feel so fucking pissed. I don't even want to climb out. I just want to stay mired in anger. Anyway, I'm working on reconciling my emotional response with my intellectual response. And I guess that's really all I have to say.
You cross my mind so much. I hear your voice in the pumping of gas. I want to be with you tonight, but I'm just so far from home.
Are we
assholes?
Yes. Are we going to be all right?
Who, me and you?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I wonder all the time. I'm trying to get to the other side, but I don't... I can't. I got a lot of weird shit in my head about you that I'm trying to move past.
What's the other side?
The other side is...
Where is it?
The other side is probably you with a girlfriend, because you're a fucking diehard romantic that's probably going to be remarried in 2 years. And me lone wolfing because I'm hateful and mean and I'm never going to be in a relationship.
That's a very specific...
No, but I just mean, but we're all coexisting happily and kids are playing together and everyone's friends and having a beer and it's super great. That's what I try to envision.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then I leave and go home to Spain.
Adios, motherfucker. No,
I leave you to your second miserable marriage and retire to the nude beaches of Spain.
Right. Who's watching the kids during all this?
Oh, I don't know. I forgot about them. All right, can we be done now?
Yeah.
Okay.
It could be worse. Just remember that.